Hey, Theater People, Patrick here. So we at the Theater People podcast are on a new mission to bring theater fans and well-known theater artists together in unique and affordable ways. To that end, as a lot of you know, we're doing a series of intimate live shows in May, June, July, and August. We're calling it our Live Summer Series. Leslie Margarita is our guest in May, Lindsay Mendez is with us in June, Laura Osnes is our guest in July, and we're still working on August. In keeping with our mission of affordability, the tickets are just $10. After making it a unique experience for you, here's how it's going to work. The shows start at 6 p.m., we'll do an interview, and then the guests will perform a few songs with our live accompanist, and then the guests will take questions from the audience. The doors will open at 5 p.m., an hour before the show starts. Producer Mike and I, and some of our Broadway friends and past guests, will be there just to hang out with you. We'll have music and food and a photographer. It's going to be a party. And then after the show, time permitting, the guest will stick around and say hi and tell you how gorgeous you are. We are so excited for this, and we know a lot of you are too. More information and links to buy tickets are up on our website, www.theaterpeople.com. That's theater with an E-R-P-P-L.com. Click the Summer Series tab. Okay, now to the show. Welcome to the Theater People Podcast. I'm Patrick Hines, your host. I have two words for you, theater people. Sierra Bagas. I know. So when Sierra made her Broadway debut in 2008 in the title role of the hit Disney musical The Little Mermaid, she became an overnight not just star, but also idol, role model, sensation even, in a way that happens so rarely to a person appearing on Broadway for the first time. She of course went on to star in the Broadway revival of Masterclass opposite Tyne Daly, and as Christine Daae in London's West End production of Love Never Dies, Andrew Lloyd Webber's sequel to The Phantom of the Opera, which she also starred in on Broadway. I first got to witness the greatness that is Sierra Bagas on stage in last season's It Should Have Been You, a show that I found to be so special for a variety of reasons that we'll get into in this interview. She's currently starring as Rosalie Mullins, the sort of tight-lipped, rulesy principal in the brand new Andrew Lloyd Webber musical School of Rock, a show that frequent listeners know I am completely obsessed with. You guys, I love this interview for a lot of reasons, not the least of which being that we did the interview in Sierra's dressing room about 90 minutes prior to an evening performance, and I think it really captures the bustle and energy of the backstage of a Broadway theater just before showtime. At one point, we're interrupted good-naturedly by a stage manager, the charming and handsome Alex Brightman makes a small cameo, oh, and then there was the moment Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber himself spoke over the PA system. Anyway, Sierra is a force of nature and just as brilliant as you imagine she is. It was so much fun to chat with her. Here's our conversation. Our rivals wear the prep school crown. There's no in between. We get results here. Sierra Bagas, it is such a divine pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for doing the Theater People podcast.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
It's like a dream a couple years in the making, and it's like the fantasy way of booking a guest is through like another famous person. Norm Lewis, when he did our show, was like, you gotta get Sierra on the show. And we're like, yeah, we'd love to do that. He's like, I'll send her an email. I bet she'd love to do it.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. I just got an email from him, and he's like, I wouldn't send you to anybody ridiculous. So I was like, all right, great. And then I emailed you, and that was that.
And then whenever I get an email from somebody of your caliber, which is like once a year, I always do that gay scream of like, ah, and I work in an office that's like very theatery. And I was like, you guys, look who just emailed me. Look at, and like everyone gathered around my computer.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah,
so I just saw School of Rock last week, completely obsessed. Congratulations on this amazing production.
Thank you.
My first question doesn't really have anything to do with School of Rock,
amazing.
However. Because in doing the research on you, I come to learn that you have like a minor obsession with Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
And like, I'm looking at your wall and there's all these beautiful like album covers.
Yep.
So here we are in the theater that made her famous, what presumably was the dressing room where she lived during that time. Do you ever, how does it feel to be in the space where she was?
It's amazing because, I mean, everybody knows that I'm obsessed with her, and I invoked her on opening night. Tyne Daly taught me that, actually, that's like when you need to have just a little more strength, you invoke those who have come before you, and usually there are people like Maria Callas or something who's like moved on to the next life.
Yeah.
But with Streisand, like, you can invoke her and you feel that. But I do feel like it's so like, spiritual for me that she was in this theater, and this is where, this is, I have a picture of myself, like, outside of this theater, like, when I was in, I think I was in college or something, because I couldn't believe this is where, this, like, oh, that's
yeah,
the garden.
Yeah, totally.
I didn't know it for anything other than that's where she made her, did her, as Funny Girl. So, yes, it was important to me to put some Streisand framed records on this wall for me, and then I have Steve, for those who can't see us, Stevie Nicks is also framed because that's then for the character.
Of course.
But Rosalie Mullins' Stevie Nicks is Ciara's Barbara Streisand, so it was a nice, like, just melding of the two. But yeah, I just, oh, love her.
are you a person who likes to know the history of the theater that you're in and the dressing room that you're in? Like, is that stuff important to you?
I think it's becoming more important to me. I never thought of it before, but I do love knowing the book that Michael Riedel has just written, Razzle Dazzle, or maybe
he's wrote
a while ago. One of the girls in our show is reading it, and she was telling us in there what the history of this theater was, and it was like a horse. There was horses used to be,
yeah,
it was like a horse.
This whole area, the subway used to stop at like 34th Street or something, and that's where Longacre comes from, is because this area was called the Longacre.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I love knowing that stuff now, because I think I am interested in like other realms and like whatever ghosts are. For sure there's always ghost
yes.
things like going on. But also, just don't you feel like just energetically when you walk into an empty theater, there... It's like all the hair stands up
yeah.
there because there's so many energies that have come before.
Totally.
But also, not just Barbara Streisand was in here. Angela Lansbury was in here.
For what show?
Mame.
Oh, my goodness.
It was somebody so famous made their Broadway debut. Carol Burnett made her Broadway debut here.
Maybe in this dressing room, like from,
I don't
like
know.
Lived in this dressing room.
I don't know what her debut was, but she made her Broadway debut at the Winter Garden Theater.
Wow.
And the fact there was animals in here and their horses
yeah.
and they're like represent strength, and I just love that. I love so much.
It's funny because for, you know, you're younger than me, but for our generation, there have been such long running shows in this theater.
Yeah, you forget. I did. All that I knew that was here was Cats and Mamma Mia.
Right.
And then I saw Rocky.
Yes.
And then that was all that I never really... So hearing this, like, it's weird. It's like this theater has come back alive or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people should get to experience it because it's one of the coolest theaters I've ever been in. Also, because it's so massive, the backstage is huge, and we have... It's because it was for horses.
Right, totally.
And in the guys' dressing room... There's like a metal ring on the wall, like where they used to tie the horse up to. So it still is like there. Like there's like a barn door, basically.
I'm obsessed with the history of the building in New York and
it.
The theaters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess we should get to School of Rock.
Sure.
I am crazy about this show. I love it so much. I've been listening to the album nonstop. And
cool.
We sat like, you know, in the seventh row, my producer and I, with our mouths hanging open. Like, the music that you guys are singing and the magic that you and the kids are doing, it's so beautiful. And, of course, everybody knows you have this really, like, long history with Andrew Lloyd Webber. But how specifically did this show come to you?
This came up when I was doing Love Never Dies for him in London.
Yeah.
So it was like 2010, I think. And I went to his house. He has, you know, 25,000 houses. But I went to
right.
one of his houses for like a dinner. And I remember him and Madeline Lloyd Webber, who is his wife, and she's one of our executive producers. They were... Oh, how funny. Andrew just talked. Is talking on
the Is he
thing.
Talking on the PA?
It's the pre-show. This is Andrew Lloyd Webber, and the kids
yes,
are playing the
music lab. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm like,
right.
Is he in the building?
Yeah, of course. He is now. I was just there, and I guess what had happened is they had just secured the rights to the movie to have it as the musical.
Uh-huh.
So this was way back in 2010, I think. And... Andrew was just like joking about how I would be the principal. It was like very much jokey, and that it would be like, and I feel like at one point Madeline just like came up and put some glasses on me and is like, yeah, that's right.
Oh my goodness.
And so it was just very like, that was it. And I, you know, as you do with shows, you don't count on anything anymore. Yeah. Because it's just like, who knows what's going to come in? And there were so many other things that happened to me since Love Never Dies. So yes. This was not something that I was like, and then that, I didn't really think about it. And then it ended up being one of the fastest tracking shows to come in to New York, because we ended up doing a reading of it last December. And then they did a workshop of it, which I wasn't doing because I was doing It Should Have Been You.
Oh, yeah, which I cannot wait to talk about.
Oh, I love
that show so much.
We all did, yeah. And the audiences did. And
yeah.
Anyway, we'll get to it. But so then that was it. And then so I knew I was going to do the show but couldn't do the workshop, and then came in for Broadway.
I mean, so... this is where you are in your career. People just say, we want you for this, and you say, yes, I want to do this, or no, I don't want to do this.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm in a new phase, I guess, which sort of happened, and I was like, oh, there's a new pressure that comes with when you're not really auditioning anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to audition, but not necessarily for a musical.
Right.
But maybe I will. Also, it's not for sure. I'm not offer only, but I have been offered the past few shows that I've done without an audition. But with that, the new thing is the pressure that comes from that is you didn't have to audition, therefore right. The expectation is bigger. Now, this could all just be me putting my own fear into it, but I definitely felt that very strongly with this. It's like, oh, okay, there's an expectation that I need to come in really ready because... Yeah. You know, other people didn't have a say in my casting. It was Andrew saying, this is who we're having.
Oh, my.
And he put in, I mean, he added the whole Queen of the Night yes. stuff and, like, all that for Rosalie, for me. And so, yeah.
It's interesting, too, because in doing the research about you, I guess I'm not the only person who thinks this, but it's a departure for you, this character.
Yes.
You know, it's less ingenue and more comedic.
Yes, and that was the other thing. Because he knows me very well, he wanted to showcase another side of me. And my relationship with Andrew is really jokey. We're just, like, silly together. So... that's like, you know, Love Never Dies is not that, and neither is Christine Daae. So
right.
It was important to him too, like, to have the humor as well. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's very important because I've always been somebody who doesn't want to be just pigeonholed in one box. I love to do all the things. Mm-hmm. I'm still not done doing ingenue. As long as I can play ingenue, I'll play ingenue. But I love doing this so much. And I researched her in like, I had so much fun researching this character and putting her together and basing her off of people in my life. And
like your sister.
My sister. Harriet Harris was a huge inspiration for this
yeah.
character as well because of It Should Have Been You. I started doing the research while I was doing Should Have Been You. And when I was on stage and I was with Harriet, who was playing Georgette, and I was on stage with her one night and I was like, oh, my God. I think Georgette Howard is Rosalie Mullen's mother. And I was like, and I told Harriet this, and I'm like, Georgette is the reason that Rosalie Mullen struggles with perfection and never being enough. And she had, you know, if, like, it was that kind of stuff that I put together that's like, you know, geeky, like, ridiculous
yeah, yeah.
theater things. But I love that stuff so much. And then I also have, like, I put together a Pinterest board of different really strong women that, like, down to Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
that's, like, just in how they, their stance and what they wear. I mean, I literally, the first day that I stepped into rehearsal, I was in a heel and a pencil skirt and a blazer and a pair of glasses and my hair was up. I was not coming in looking like Christine. I had to do that because this is not my normal go-to way to be. Like, I'm super low-key and hippie.
Yeah.
So I had to, and then it informed, like, how I walked and how I hold my hands. And I see her as somebody who's a very closed-off, fearful person. When it's gone, then what remains? Tell me where did the time.
See you.
for the outburst. Please, I'll be okay. Let's keep this our secret. Who'd believe it anyway? We'll pretend.
You had said something that I thought was so interesting, and I wanted to ask you about it. Okay, so here's I don't usually like read questions, but mm-hmm. I wanted to get this right. Can you talk about the idea that being imperfect is what you strive for?
Yes.
As it relates to Rosalie and to your life in general?
So much. Okay. I love this stuff. I love.
Yeah. So I should say too that I have a 2-year-old daughter. So these issues that I think about this stuff with women all the time.
Yes.
You know, it's ever present. And as I was doing my research, I was like, I just want Daisy to grow up to be like Sarah Bogus.
Well, I hope that I'm still like existing when she's growing up, because I am such an advocate for this stuff. And as I keep doing my research with this, I will keep putting that out there, because my research is my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't grow up this way. And I'm taking an e-course right now by Brené Brown.
Yes, yes. What's the book?
If you haven't read Rising Strong...
There's another one, isn't there?
Gifts of Imperfection is the first
one. That's what I was thinking
of. And then
of.
The second one that we're working on right now in the e-course is Daring Greatly. And so it's that... She wrote Gifts of Imperfection, Daring Greatly, and now she's just written Rising Strong. And it's so cool doing this e-course. Hold on.
Yeah.
Come in. We're being interrupted by a beautiful School of Rock poster.
Yes.
Available in the lobby. Thank you. Come back. Oh, look. It's Alex Brightman.
Hi, Alex Brightman.
You've already heard from Alex Brightman.
He knows about my man crush. It's a real thing.
I'm going to need to see you later. We have a pre-show that we do, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just... You always have to connect with who you're going to be playing on stage with. Anyway, so this e-course with Brené Brown is... life-changing, and it's so cool to get to go through somebody's book. Like, her homework assignment is read these 2 chapters, and then we discuss. Like, it's just amazing. So she's like guiding us through with this research that she's done. Anyways, why am I talking about imperfection?
Yeah.
So that is starting my career essentially as a Disney princess.
Mm-hmm.
There is a certain amount of perfection that I was striving for, because I didn't know any better. And because with Disney, that is a brand you have to uphold. And it's very important that you are being that character that is the... you don't want to dash anyone's dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, make... Yeah. Like, Ariel suddenly, like, a punk rocker. Like,
right.
Ariel is who she is. And so, but with that, I put a lot of pressure on myself... throughout my life to be perfect and strive for perfection, and it doesn't exist, and in fact it creates a lot of anxiety.
Uh-huh.
And I have a lot of fans who I really try to get this message out to stop saying, because fans, especially in this day and age, they idolize who... I love Barbara Streisand, but I never wanted to be her.
Mm-hmm.
And in this generation, you have people who want to be you and who call you perfect. And it makes my skin crawl, because I'm like, nope, absolutely not. And we shouldn't have to go out there like these celebrities who are like, here, let me show you how imperfect I am. And then even with that, people are still like, no, they're perfect because.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, so... I am now calling myself an imperfectionist, and it is so helpful to just, it's just living, you cannot achieve perfection, because it already exists just by us being born, but it's not anything to strive for, because it isn't a thing, that it isn't there. It's, so I keep saying we're perfectly imperfect, and we're imperfectly perfect, so... That's just my new thing. So with Rosalie, as I was researching, I almost had to unlearn what I have learned for myself to make life better for me, because Rosalie is stuck in perfection. It's her lyrics in the beginning, the alma mater that she's written, her verse or whatever with the school is, the kids say, we seek perfection, toil and never rest, and we'll take our place amongst the best, and all the, and she also says to Mr. Schneebly when he comes in, she says that they teach them discipline with fear of doing less than well. Like, all these things. It's like, yeah. Nobody's getting this in the audience, I don't think, unless Brene Brown comes, which I hope she will. But I think she would be like, oh my God. And that's what makes Rosalie so fascinating to me. And it helped me, like, humanize her, because I chose a specific everything for her, down to what underwear she's wearing. And because she is living in a constant state of not enough. Mm-hmm. And it isn't until Mr. Schneebly comes in, and this opposite end of the spectrum, who, funnily enough, I think is also in a sort of downward spiral. It's just from the other end of the spectrum. But they both need to balance each other out in a way, and to remind each other of, I don't know, music and that stuff that just lets you shed all of the need for perfection. I don't know. It just, her journey is, she gets to see that there is another way to do it. Mm-hmm. And so when I get to let my hair down in the bar and do that whole thing, it's like, oh. And my acting teacher said to me, by the end of the show, you should feel amazing. You should feel like, oh.
And do you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was just watching, they were on The View today, uh-huh. my cast, and I was watching them, and I said to my boyfriend as I was watching, I'm like, I love this show. Yeah. I love this show so much. Like how you were saying, like, you keep, like, thinking about, I love this show. I love coming to work. I really do. I love it.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, because the show is such a celebration of like, music, mm-hmm. and kids with music in school. And I know that's an important issue to you. And if you don't mind me asking, I read that you had said that you wouldn't have graduated without your music and your drama program. And I was wondering if you would talk a little bit about that, because I think that, I know 10 million people are going to listen to this episode because you're on it. And I think that Sweet. You have a lot to tell them on that subject, maybe.
Yeah, I'm the opposite of Rosalie. I was a terrible student. I didn't like learning, actually. I didn't care about anything having to do with anything that wasn't theater or music. And I was good at music, and so that helped me come out and realize, like, oh, I'm good at this. I really like this. I was terrible at math. I didn't understand things. I was just not, it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
And I felt a lot of shame around that as well. My sister, who's one of my role models in my whole life, she is Rosalie in the way that she was an A student. She's very smart. And I am not in that way. And so I had pressure just on myself about this. I can't do this, and I'm not interested. But my drama program at my high school, our teacher, Nancy Priest, she had been teaching there for 30 years. And it's an inner-city public high school. We had no money, but we put on shows.
Where was it?
Denver, Colorado.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And I felt so connected there, and it taught me about community. She's the one who taught us also that when you watch something, any art, you have to give a compliment first, and then you can talk about, here's what I would fix.
Uh-huh.
So that's so important to me too. Like, when you come to a show or any type of thing, no matter what you felt, you have to find something good about it, because you will. It's easy. You can do it.
Yeah.
But we also, there's this trap we fall into of just, it'll be cool if we pick it apart, and mm-hmm. it's cool to not like things or whatever. So anyways, I always felt like I had a home when I was at school, because I could, like, even down to, I didn't have to put my stuff in my locker, I could leave it in her room.
Yeah.
And that was just how it was with the drama program. But it was also a hard class, so she made me want to research and things like that. Like, I had to do a report on Chorus Line. Like, these things like that. And she is the one who brought me to New York. Our class, when we were sophomores in high school, came to New York, and that was how I ever saw New York for the first time. And I saw Chicago, I saw Rent, I saw The Lion King, and I saw Titanic, the musical.
Wow.
Yeah. So those were the first four shows.
Do you, as Sierra Bagas, now have the opportunity to give back to that program? Do you ever get to go there? And
she doesn't teach there anymore. My senior year was her. She retired.
Oh.
But on February 13th and 14th, I'm going to be in Colorado, and I'm going to sing with the symphony, my concert. And I am going to... She will be there, and the other teachers from my life will be there. She still lives in Colorado. She's an artist. She's an amazing painter. And I've I've written in, like, some, there's been books and things that people have asked, can you contribute, like, a chapter or something, and I've written about her. She is a huge influence to me, and if I ever win, when I win that Tony Award, I will
that was like
be,
any minute now.
When that happens, which I look forward to that whenever that's going to be, I will, part of what I fantasize about is the people that I will be able to thank.
Yeah.
And she is honestly one of those people.
I wanted to ask you about Mr. Alex Brightman, just a little yes. thing, because he's going through something now that you went through,
yep.
you know, and I was wondering what it's like to watch somebody go through what you went through in terms of sort of like, his episode of our podcast is coming out on Monday, and uh-huh. I've been working on it the last few days, and I mean, I think he's so genius in this show, and I was saying that, like, a star is born,
yep.
you know, with this performance. And how has he come to you for any guidance, and what do you say to him?
Well, it is interesting because I now know what everybody was doing when this was happening for me, and I didn't understand that at the time because you're just in it. But I love being in the position where I'm watching this happen. And it also reminds me this, like, I'm in that position yeah. where I'm watching it. It's not me.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I am trying to find the balance of not telling him how I would do it and allowing him to find this for himself, because nothing was more annoying to me than people that would say to me, and all out of love, but they used to say to me, you should this and you should have and you should is such a difficult
yeah, yeah.
word. And so I really don't do that with him. And yes, there's been times that he's come in my dressing room and he's like, I want to ask you about this because I know you've been there.
Yeah.
And I am really working on just trying to stay in a place of listening and not even offering so much advice, because it is such his journey. But I know, like, I just want him to stay. There's a difference between a star and a leading man.
Yeah, he told me that you told him that.
Yes, good job, Alex. And I really, and he's doing that. He's doing that. And I'm watching that happen, and I love that so
yeah.
much. I'm really, really proud of him. And I can't wait. He will, I don't want to jinx anything, but I will be there for all of what's going to happen
yeah.
to him in this next few months. And I cannot wait to, I'm so happy that I'm in a position where I can be supportive of somebody and watch it happen.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I can't believe I'm sitting on your couch. You know, I've been dreaming about having you on this podcast for like over a year.
Really?
Well, ever since I saw It Should Have Been You, which we're going to talk
okay.
about now, that show was so special and important to me.
Mm.
And I went into it not, that's a lie. I went into it knowing what was going to happen. I
mm-hmm.
knew that there was a twist. And we couldn't get to you, but so, and not that we wouldn't have loved to have had Lisa Howard and Montego Glover on the show, which we did, and they were amazing interviews, but I had a lot of specific questions for you, you
oh,
know?
Wow.
Well, so we can talk about the twist at this point, right?
Yes, we can.
Okay. So the show takes place on your wedding day.
Yep.
And the great Lisa Howard plays your sister. She's like the sister of the bride. And it turns out that everyone's gay. It's
yep.
like the bride is gay. She's in love with her best friend. The groom is gay, in love with the best man. And I thought, I mean, you're Sierra Bagus. You're a really big star. And you've got all these kids that really look up to you. And I just remember, I mean, I was crying having this thought. Like, this woman did this thing where she, I don't know if it was important to you to play a lesbian at this point in your career, or if just the story itself was important to you, but it meant so much to me that you had done that. And I wanted to ask you about, I mean, it brought a lot, your being in that show brought a lot of attention to that show, and just the idea of the whole theme of that show, which is
yeah.
just being true to yourself and loving yourself. And so, can you talk about why you wanted to do that show, and specifically if those themes were important to you?
Yes, to all of what you said.
I asked you 10 questions.
But yes, it was so important to me, and I can't even tell you how much I related to her and how much I was like, I have to do this. I have to tell my truth. And it was one of the most difficult and scary things, too. I don't even know if I achieved. It is something else playing a character who is living in her shame.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so much to the point that she would let it go this far. I mean, it's a comedy.
Totally.
And yet, I couldn't get to the comedy for a long time because I was weeping for this whole situation. And I remember in rehearsal when I sang that song. That first of all, when I heard that song, I had been asked to sing it by the composer for something. Oh, it was for the what's the P Flag.
Oh yeah.
And I sang it, and Edie Windsor was there.
Oh my God! For anybody who doesn't know, Edie Windsor is she's the name on the case that made gay marriage federally recognized by the Supreme Court.
So just a little.
Did
something.
You meet her?
Yes.
Wow.
And she was, and this was well before even the show was going to happen. It had no theater or anything, but they had asked me would I sing this, and I, as soon as I heard the song, I was in tears. I was like, oh my God, I have to sing this song. Gay, straight, nothing. Like, you have to, it's about being in your truth.
Yeah.
And I sang that song, and Edie was there, and it was just like, I remember being at that PFLAG event and being like, this is so important. This is so important. And I even talked to my therapist about it, because I'm a very open person with, I'm so much a person that you love who you love, which I didn't understand that until I felt that in my life, that it is like, oh no, it really is about the person. So I said to my therapist, I was like, I don't identify with the straight people in that room, but I also didn't identify with the gay people who were telling their stories about like being accepted and stuff, because that isn't for me. But I have lived in just a strange like question, I guess, of, or not even a question, just that's who I am.
Yeah.
And like I say all the time, I'm like, for whatever reason, that my celebrity crush is Gillian Anderson, and so I'm so happy that X-Files are back on. But so I'm very much like, anyways, so I digress, or maybe I don't, but anyways, I remember being in rehearsal, and I with everybody, and it was the first time we were staging that number. So David Hyde Pierce was directing, but he sort of let me go where I wanted to go with it. And then, and so on, when I sing the song, should I say what the, I sing a song called A Little Bit Less Than, and it's when she has decided, the bride, me, I have decided that I cannot lie about this anymore. And I'm going to tell my parents that I am gay. And not just that I'm gay, I am in love with my best friend who was Montego Glover. And
who's so amazing.
Yeah. And everybody is there being like, don't do this, Rebecca, do not tell right now, this is, don't wait. And my whole thing is like, but how can I possibly wait any longer? This, I have to be true to myself. And I got to the part in the song, it was pretty early on, and I started singing the, it's easy to do, with that's what they say, why are you waiting to pick up the phone, blast off a text, stop this debate, and the people you love, they need to know.
Don't even try, you can't defend it. Telling my mom.
And I remember I clicked something, and I started being so truthful in that rehearsal. It went so, it was like, I couldn't sing it. It went, I just started sobbing. It was like the first chorus of it, the words became so real for me in that moment that I had to, and I just broke down.
To myself, I'll have no regret. Still, I keep feeling they'll think I'm just a little bit less than. If they don't ask and I don't tell, they miss the best of me. When I deny part of my life, I risk the rest of me. Sure, I can pass, keep up the show. Deep down, I know it's time to end it. And the longer I wait.
And I stood in the middle of that rehearsal room, and Montego just came up, and she just hugged me. Everyone was silent, everyone was crying. DHP was just came up and just stood next to me, and I was sobbing, and I couldn't stop, and it was quiet. And then they were like, then I got myself together, and they were like, we can move on from this and come back to it, or what? And I was like, no, we have to do it now. I need a second, and then we have to do this, because if not, I will be too terrified to go there. Like, it was so personal.
Speak up right away, bring those surprises to light. You know, a life built on love. don't, I'll really be.
And I always tell people when I'm teaching masterclass that emotion is paralyzing, and it is, because you can't sing with all of that. You just can't.
Right.
But Julie Andrews said in a masterclass one time that you go to the place where you almost go, and then you step back. So you almost break down, but you have to pull it back because it is paralyzing. So I had to find that, and it took me a while. It took me a lot of previews, performances, to figure out that balance, because I was like, oh, wow, this is so unbelievably yeah. personal. And then I'll just talk about the fact that when gay marriage became fucking legal and we were doing the show that night and the Supreme Court had ruled, and doing that show on that night was unforgettable.
Yeah.
It was like, and when I talked about that, when my character comes forth and she says that she's, that it was just like, it was an anthem.
Yeah.
And then they even wrote a line for me that night about something like, well, if the Supreme Court can say it or something, it's like got all this applause. Everybody was just, and then Tyne Daly, I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
And she talked about her, what was it, like 20 years or something like yeah. that earlier, when she had gotten married to her husband who was a different color than her, and it was illegal.
Right.
And now 20 years later, on this very day, they have just made love legal. Like, it's yeah. just
Isn't it a crazy time to be alive?
Yes, it is.
You know?
It is. You and know, think of, that's all, that was all just within the last year.
Yeah.
Like, it's only just January.
I know. My husband and I had to get married 3 times.
Did you really?
Yeah, because we got married. We were getting married in New York City. Like, our families were coming, but it wasn't legal in New York yet. So we got married. We went to Connecticut and got married so that when we did get married in New York, it would be legal. And then, so then we had the, so we got married that day. Then we got married, like, in a fake ceremony in front of our friends and family. And then it became legal in New York. So we got married again. And then federal marriage went through, and we got married again. So we don't have an anniversary. We think of the day that we met as our anniversary because we've gotten married so many times.
Oh my God.
And I think maybe that's part of why It Should Have Been You was so special to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because those themes are real. It's like what you were saying.
So
it
real.
Is a comedy, but it's true. It's, all of it's
yes.
real.
Well, we talk about that. I mean, that's why I went into all the detail, too, about Rosalie, because this is a comedy as well. But it has to, comedies have to come from the same place. And that's what, with also It Should Have Been You, it's funny because it's so serious to everyone.
Right.
I think of it as like a cat play. Like, you know, when dogs play with things, they're like, it's just funny because they're just like, ha, ha, ha.
Right.
But cats, it's hilarious because they're so,
so serious
about
totally.
Playing with a string,
yes.
you know? And it's like, and that's why it's funny.
Yeah.
That's why Tyne and Harriet's characters are brilliant, because it's just life or death to them.
Yeah.
But it has to be.
You know, speaking of Tyne and Harriet and you and Montego and David Burkta and Lisa Howard, I mean, it was the greatest assembled cast of
it
this season.
It kind of was.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Oh, and then David Hyde Pierce.
David Hyde Pierce.
You know, as the director, who I saw yep. on the train literally yesterday, and I was going to tell, every time I see anybody who was associated with It Should Have Been You, I want to tell them how much I loved it, and I almost did, but
you
I didn't.
You have to. I'm telling you now, I'm declaring this, you have to, because that was such a personal show for him, and his husband wrote it.
Yeah.
I mean, they put everything into that. All their heart, all their soul, and it will be so great for him to hear that.
Okay, I'm gonna tell him that you said it was okay.
Yes.
I don't mean to bother you, but Sierra Baca said it was fine.
Okay.
Can we go back?
Yeah.
So you made your Broadway debut, of course, as Ariel in The Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading, so you got the job. Tell me how you got the job. Because that show was worked out in Denver, like in your hometown, right?
Yes. But I was living in Las Vegas doing Phantom, and I got a call to, well, first I auditioned for it on like a vacation in October of 2006. And I did not get a call back or anything. I
That's
never heard
amazing.
Again. And then, and apparently they had been looking for an Ariel for a year. And at this point, it was January. Actually, I just had the anniversary because I wrote it in my calendar the day I got the call about Little Mermaid. And it was, I can't remember, it was January something, early January. But so I auditioned in January, because then I get a call from my agent saying they want you for a final callback. And I was like, what? I've never even... And I had heard, a girl had started telling people she had been cast.
Oh, my
so
God.
So I had heard that it had been cast. And I even said to her, I said, but this person got it. And the casting director was like, no. So something went down, but I don't know. And this is like before Twitter, any like Facebook right. or anything
is
like that.
Is it a person
so.
That we know?
I don't remember who okay, it was, to be okay. honest, but it was somebody.
Laura Osnes, don't no. do that, girl.
She wasn't. She didn't exist yet. <That's> She hadn't even sang on TV. Yeah. So I flew myself, and I remember being like, are you sure? Because to get myself there in 3 days from Vegas, it was going to be $700.
To come here or to go to Denver?
To New York.
Oh, my God.
And audition for this. And she was like, yes, go do it. So I booked a $700 flight. And I remember telling myself, if I get this, this will be worth it. Like, yeah. it wasn't.
Look where we are right now.
I know. And that's what. But that's the power of intention that I've learned about now. That's like, it just wasn't an option to not go. But it also, and I always say this because it's not just about just go, do the work. I mean, I did the work. Yeah. In those 4 days, 3 days, or whatever it was, I was like, okay, I'm being given a second chance at yeah. this audition. What didn't I do? And there's always more you could have done. And it's not about not being enough, but there was more work I could have done. I literally watched that movie with a pen and paper being like, why are people relating to a freaking drawing of a mermaid, and it's how she's talking, and but you cry and you feel all the feelings. So I was researching like all of that. I also researched, I went to a because I was in Vegas, so there's no like museums, but there was a fish tank in the middle of a casino that had a girl swimming like a mermaid in it.
Oh, really?
So I went and I watched a human swimming like a mermaid. I mean, she's there, like, looking all sexual for everybody, right. but I was there, like, she must have been like, what is this, lesbian? So, should have been you, you know?
Exactly.
So, I was like, okay, that's how to do it and, like, all this. So, also, I realized, like, when you're in the water, you're never still. So, that's why when I did the show, I kept moving my arms and like turned it, and I had great, super great muscles. But I did my research, and that's, I guess, a huge thing that I put out there for everybody, because they always want to know how, what's, and there's no, that's just how I do it. And the more research you do, it's like, and this is coming from, again, somebody who hated school.
Right.
Hated research. I didn't want to do the homework, and I resisted it very much, even in college, when I was majoring in musical theater, and you had to do the work. And it was like, why can't you just be talented?
Right.
Oh, this was when they changed the key to the song, too, because the Broadway, the For Part of Your World, the movie version is in D or C or something. I don't know. Maybe my... Anyways, it's a whole step up, the Broadway version, because my voice sounded younger. I sang through the movie version, and then they, right there with Alan Menken, they were like, let's see what it sounds like a whole step up. And that's what made my voice sound younger. And so that's why it's... Sierra's key is a whole step up.
Wow.
So the... Yeah. And it happened right there in that audition.
Betcha on land, they understand, but they don't reprimand their daughters. Bright young women, sick of swimming, ready to stand. And ready to know what the people know. Ask my questions and get some answers. What's a fire and why does it? What's the word?
Of that And then they asked me to go, like, wait outside. And then Stephen Meir, the choreographer, came out and was like, come with me. Took me upstairs with another guy. Sean Palmer was not even in the mix at this point, which is so weird. And he ended up getting it. That was later. But so for this callbacks, I was with another guy and we were learning like the dance and everything. Then they brought us in. Like, it was a full on. Then I read with Flounders.
Wow.
We did Heelys. So by the end of that, I flew back to Vegas and it was a weekend. And then I was at the dentist when I was in Vegas and I got the call that I had booked it.
That's amazing. So the one thing I wanted to ask you was about the moment you were talking about when you got the job and it was like the most exciting thing that then turned to panic.
Oh, yes. With Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
I just remember I hadn't dealt with fear before. I'd always been a kid who was like excited to be in front of people and stuff. And so I was not ready for fear. And it came because I had also never been given the chance to play a title role in a
right, new of course.
$60 million or whatever dollars it was Broadway show, that I'm like 25 or 6 years old, I think. And it was like, oh my God, now how do I do this?
Right.
Because there was this thing that started coming up that's like, they're going to find out I don't know what I'm doing. And I am saying this to everybody who's listening, that we all feel that at all times. Now will be the time where they find out that I don't know what I'm doing. Because none of us know. We're making this up. We're just making it up as we go along. That's why I'm always like, this is the world according to Sierra. It's not the only way, but this is the... But I was... A friend of mine at the time, who is not a friend of mine anymore, said to me, oh, well, just take a Xanax.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't even know what Xanax was, and I was like, what is that going to do? And he was like, well, just numb your feelings. And I'm like, no.
This is bad advice, you guys. This is very bad advice.
It is very bad advice. And I was like, oh, this is not anybody I want in my life, because that isn't the answer.
Right.
And I am obsessed with artists who can get on stage without any substance whatsoever except water.
Right.
Because that is a thing that people can fall into, because it is so scary. That you can just go, let me just get something that'll take the edge off.
Right.
And that is very real. That does happen. And I am interested in people's honesty who did not go that route. And it was very important to me. That's like, stick this out. These feelings are hard, but I'm going to get through it. And I did.
Yeah. One other amazing thing that came out of Little Mermaid, if I know the story correctly, is Lindsay Mendez's job in Everyday Rapture.
Because
I'm obsessed with Lindsay Mendez. I'm obsessed with Everyday Rapture. And you recommended her to Sherry Renee Scott.
Yes, I did. Because Lindsay and I have known each other. She was my first friend in New York. We've known each other since 2004. We did a show called Princesses together. We were all unknown, completely all out of school. Me, Lindsay Mendez, who went on to do Wicked.
And yes.
Marissa Perry, who was Tracy Turnblad in Hairspray,
yes.
Ended up being. Patty Murin, who was Lissa Strada
Jones.
Oh, my
goodness, I love her.
Everybody. I mean, I'm forgetting a whole bunch of people right now. But, everybody ended up going on doing all these things. So, yes, I recommended Lindsay to Sherry, because I'm like, Lindsay has one of the sickest voices you'll
Unreal.
Ever hear.
Unreal, yeah.
And Sherry was like, I just don't know. We've seen all these people. I was like, you need to see my friend Lindsay. And that was the end of it. She saw her and was like, yep.
All right, we've got 2 minutes mm-hmm. to tell everybody about Love Never Dies. Your journey with Phantom began in Vegas, correct?
Yes.
And then how did that turn into you becoming Andrew Lloyd Webber's muse, which is what I think you are?
In Vegas, he saw my performance, and I didn't think that I was like, oh, he must be like this with everyone, but he pulled me aside and said, like, many compliments to me, and it was like, oh, okay, this is like a thing. And then years later is when I auditioned for Love Never Dies, and it was for him, and that was, I don't know, it was just like, it just sort of became... We became friends, and we would have dinners and stuff after shows at Love Never Dies. And
This is in the West End.
This is in the West End in London.
And it's the sequel to Phantom of the Opera, for anybody who doesn't know.
Yes, and if you don't know it, you have to get the soundtrack. You have to get the soundtrack. It's on iTunes, because it will be one of your favorite recordings you will ever hear, and you will cry your eyes out. It is so heartbreaking, that story. And I just fell in love with doing Christine 10 years later, and I really hope that it's going to come to Broadway, because I will want to be doing that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I'm not done telling that story, and I would love to, I love this thing that I've got to revisit these characters I've played that I love so much, and I revisit them, and I get to, like, be older doing them so that I have all this more experience that I can bring to it. But it was one of the greatest shows ever, and it was Jack O'Brien directed it, who is my hands down favorite director that I've ever worked with, and I think about him all the time. I thought of him on this project too, of when I would be stuck with what I would do or something, I would think, what would Jack say, or what would you, and because he's just, everyone should get to work with Jack O'Brien. God,
everyone should be so lucky.
But yes, Andrew now, I mean, and then we did, I did the 25th anniversary in a Phantom for him. And I say that it is, to this day, is one of the most amazing artistic experiences of my entire career.
Wow.
It was one of those shows that just, and it was live to cinemas all around the world.
Yeah.
And it's preserved on DVD, and I just, like, Ramin and I have talked about that a lot, that it's just like, we couldn't, it was hard for us.
Because you did Love Never Dies with Ramin Karimloo, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And then I did, then we did the 25th anniversary together, and that's how people, you know, they relate us together because of those characters, because Phantom has such a huge fan base.
Yeah.
And they love those characters so much, and I don't know. There's so much to say and so much, I don't know.
Well, someday we'll be lucky enough to have you back and we'll talk about
we'll
it more.
We'll do a part two.
Yeah, it would be amazing.
Well, good start, good start.
Exactly. Sierra Bagas, I can't believe I'm sitting in your dressing room. Thank you so much
for
doing
you.
This. Such an honor to have you on our podcast.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon.
All right, thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Hey theater people, Patrick here. We're now going to make good on another Kickstarter Promote Your Product reward. This one from my pal Dorian Catani and her business, The Closet Rescue. If you're feeling stuck in your style, Dorian Catani can help you with your fashion transition. As a cross between a wardrobe stylist and a consultant, Dorian helps clients assess and organize their clothing to achieve true style. With her honest, fun, and friendly approach, she can help you purge old items, create new looks, and make lists for future shopping trips. Dorian has a scale of services that fit every budget, so whether you're looking for a simple closet cleanse or a more involved ultimate rescue, my friend Dorian has what you need to achieve ultimate fabulousness. Check out The Closet Rescue at www.theclosetrescue.com and tell Dorian Patrick says, hey girl. Theater People is produced by Mike Jensen and me, Patrick Hines. I edited this episode. Special thanks as always to Bradley Bean, Steve Tipton, Eric Emsch, our webmaster Keith Allen Herzog, Ellen Marsh, and the staff at Oswald's. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Fiddler on the Roof star Adam Cantor. Until then, tell your friends about us. Let's get the theater community talking.